Good evening, everyone. This is Amanda Manier with the Veterans Voice on 790 KABC here in Los Angeles. I am a veteran advocate and an attorney at the Veterans Law Group, and we have worked exclusively representing veterans pursuing their VA disability compensation for over 25 years. This show is all about highlighting and celebrating veterans and their families, organizing organizations that are helping veterans, providing news, and then also answering your questions on how you as a veteran or your family can get support in dealing with the VA. If you'd like to reach out to us directly off air to talk about your claim, please go to veteranslaw.com or contact us at 800-811-0523. On our website is a form that you can complete that you can submit for a free consultation. One of the great things I love to do on this show is to have guest hosts that are also working in the veteran community. And this evening, I'm honored to welcome a dear friend of mine. His name is Aaron Drake. He spent over 14 years as a military lawyer, and he now practices law out of the state of Utah. Thanks so much for joining us, Aaron.
Hello, Amanda. It is great to talk to you again, as always.
Definitely. So I would like to talk a little bit, starting out laying the foundation about your military career, just so people know who we're talking to. And so first, I want to start with letting me know and letting the public know, what made you want to join the military?
It sounds naive almost and cliche, but way back when, just after 9/11, I heard the nation's call. And, you know, a lot has happened to all of us in the last 20 years, but I spent these last 20 years in uniform. I was in law school when 9/11 happened in my first year and thought, well, I can be a part of this, and inquired as to whether they needed lawyers in uniform, and the answer was a resounding yes. So I joined through ROTC and spent the next 2 years in ROTC as my commissioning force, and the rest is history.
And that was through the Air Force?
Yes, it was the Air Force ROTC.
That's awesome. And is that where you spent your entire 20 years?
In a way, I was active duty for 7 years. And then the rest of my career I spent as a guardsman in the Utah Air National Guard. And of course, had a lot of different assignments between then and now. But I wrapped up my career as a guardsman, as a part-time guardsman, weekend warrior type.
That's awesome. And I imagine that you probably had a deployment or two. Can you tell us a little bit about where you served overseas?
I did. A lot of people are surprised, just neighbors and friends and even family, and they say, well, you're a lawyer. Why did you go to war? And I said, well, sometimes I ask myself the same question. But I had a deployment to Iraq. And oddly enough, for this Air Force guy, I was a young captain at the time, and I got tasked to deploy with an Army Civil Affairs unit, which was a little strange. It was kind of a hybrid unit. We had some Navy, we had some Army, and we had some Air. And I was part of the Rule of Law Task Force. And if you want to think about a daunting task, think about trying to establish and firm up the rule of law in Iraq. And that is what we were trying to do. And I don't know if you can tell, I was a little disillusioned about it from day one. And I certainly can understand frustrations that our troops come home with after their deployments, because it's not flag waving and patriotic. It's some difficult times downrange.
And this is enforcing the civil rule of law for the Iraqi people or for the people that are serving there in the military?
I apologize, Amanda. I didn't hear any of that question. All I got was static as you were speaking.
Sure, no problem. That was doing civils or managing the rule of law to the Iraqi people.
Civil affairs.
Or civil affairs to the Iraqi people or to the military?
Both, but more civil, more to the people. So you might recognize from the Vietnam conflict, there was the mantra, winning hearts and minds. Well, civil affairs is alive and well, and civil affairs is about winning hearts and minds. So we had task forces to build up the infrastructure at the airport. We had task forces to build up educational infrastructure. I remember one particular, I branched out and worked on all these different task forces, but mainly rule of law. We did some, you know, we tried to help them establish themselves, and it was a difficult task. But as far as the rule of law, you know, I'll give you an example. We'd work with detention facilities. There are detention facilities in Iraq where people are held without bail, without indictment, without charge, indefinitely. I mean, there were people on the records that have been held for years by the Iraqi government with really no charge at all. Wow. So for us, in constitutional terms, that means that's a huge violation of what we consider due process of law. The government can't deprive us of liberty without some process in place to protect those rights. But so sure. We worked on due process concerns. We worked on evidence gathering concerns and tried to help the Iraqis build a criminal justice system that was civil and functional.
Wow. What an incredible experience, I imagine. But as you kind of alluded to earlier, a little bit frustrating, I would imagine.
Very, very frustrating, because you realize how small you are. You realize realistically, even as the task forces and the international coalition that we were, you realize really how little effect we have on a lot of these things. And I'm sure that a lot of our veterans with the fall of Afghanistan recently have felt that all over again. I know I did. Mm-hmm. You just kind of wonder what it's all for. And Amanda, you and I see the fallout from that in terms of how it hurts individual lives. And that even now gets me kind of emotional just to think that what was it all for, right? You want to believe that you're answering the nation's call, and you are. But then sometimes things happen later on that make you wonder what the sacrifice was for. And I feel for anybody that's feeling that right now.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, everybody that we work with, as far as clients, are veterans or their families, and most of my staff is. And we definitely felt the ripple effects when Afghanistan fell, of people who were, you know, super frustrated and trying to, you know, figure out like what was the purpose and why did I do this? And it screwed up so much of my life. Just to give the public a example of, you know, majority of our clients we work with are dealing with some sort of mental health, whether it be PTSD from serving overseas. And just like you had mentioned, that even people who are in Iraq, maybe they never touched Afghanistan, but it was still from that perspective, what was the point? Why did we do this?
Even Afghanistan, for somebody like me who was only in the Iraq theater, it's all too familiar. All the themes are the same. But anyhow, we don't need to dwell on that, but that's a major part of my military career. And I guess, luckily, I got a salvation assignment after that, and I went and taught the wonderful cadets at the Air Force Academy, and that was still one of the most fulfilling things I've been able to do in this lifetime.
Yeah, and then I imagine you got to stick pretty close to home after that.
Exactly. A couple of years at the academy, teaching cadets law, Spanish, negotiations, and then I came back home to Utah and joined the Guard, and that's where I finished up. I finished up as the chief counsel for the Utah National Guard, so I was the chief counsel to the two-star, the adjutant general, and the legislative liaison for our organization, and then did my final years not as the chief counsel, but as a weekend warrior, the traditional guardsman, just doing drill as counsel for the one-star of the Air Guard.
And that's awesome.
That's how it ended.
That's awesome. And it ended with a retirement. It sounds all positive, not without some hiccups along the way. And one of the great things about what and how Aaron and I met is that he is also currently in the civilian world an attorney and is practicing law in several different aspects, but definitely around the veteran community, military law, veterans law. I understand some family law, which can get all mixed up. I would probably say the number one thing here at Veterans Law Group, we practice only VA disability compensation. Probably the number one area of law that people call us and ask us about is one, something to do with the discharge upgrade, something to do with the military, which we don't do, so we refer those out. And secondly is probably family law, dealing with the veteran community and family law complications or family law issues. Can get relatively complicated. So I would love to, as we go in through the next couple segments, dig in a little on some of those topics with you, Aaron, to get an idea kind of what your perspective is. Am I missing anything other than like establishing what you're currently doing before we go into the break?
Well, just to say that we've found so much need in the veteran appeals world that I have shut off all my referral sources and I'm winding up my family law cases.
Awesome.
So that we can do VA law exclusively, but with some military law mixed in, such as DCMR petitions and things like that. And yes, I think we should talk about those because there's so much that intersects with VA disability appeals and your VA compensation and how's that money treated by various agencies and entities. And so, yeah, I'd love to get into that stuff because speaking as a former JAG, I think we can have a particularly productive conversation about discharges and their effect on the VA.
Definitely. For those of us, as we're about to go into the break, for those of them who are listening out there who maybe don't understand what it is, I just want to establish that one of the important things about a discharge, about the discharge when they get out, is it affects their ability to get certain benefits. If they're under a dishonorable discharge, it's going to in some ways bar them from certain benefits. And sometimes some of those dishonorable discharge have to do with mental health issues related to their time in service. So we definitely want to always address that and not just look at it as an advocate perspective as, oh, well, you don't have the ability to get those benefits because you have a dishonorable discharge. So we're going to talk a little bit more about that when we get back. We're talking with Aaron Drake. This is Amanda Manier with the Veterans Voice. Good evening. This is Amanda Manier with the Veterans Voice on 790 KABC in Los Angeles. I'm a veteran advocate and attorney at the Veterans Law Group, and we work exclusively representing veterans in pursuing their VA disability compensation, and we've been doing that for about 25 years. As host of this show, it's my honor to welcome guests who are also working in the veteran community to help provide information, support, challenges, typically answering questions on what's happening in the veteran community and how they can help. So we're joined this afternoon, or this evening, by Aaron Drake. He is an attorney out of the state of Utah, and I will have him, since we just came back from the break, recap on the areas of law that he practices.
Hi again, Amanda. I practice in VA disability appeals for the majority of our practice, and then because it comes up so often, we also run Board for Correction of Military Records petitions. And advise on those. In fact, I've got a really cool success story I'd like to share with you and your listeners about that.
Let's start with that and explain a little bit about what that is, because there are people out there listening who don't have exact familiarity with the military, but they certainly know people. So what is the BCMR?
Right. And if I might, let me just quickly cover discharges in the military, because it's kind of a mystery for even a lot of people that have been through the military, especially if they only had a 4 or 6 year enlistment.
That'd be great.
There's a separation from the military, which means you don't get retirement benefits, but you just separate because it's your time. There's a retirement, which means you get full retirement benefits to include potentially a medical retirement, but those are in the retirement category. And then there are discharges, which are also known as involuntary discharges. Not all of them are necessarily bad, but they are involuntary. And of course, I spent at least 10 years prosecuting these discharges, right? It's not a criminal thing. It's an administrative thing. But the bottom line is this. When a military member is discharged out of the force involuntarily, their service gets characterized. It gets a characterization of service. And by the way, the basis for a discharge could be a pattern of misconduct. It could be conditions unfitting. It could be you're now a conscientious objector. It could be, frankly, it used to be because you were gay. And I've got, you know, my mind really started changing about how I wanted to be in the military when I was forced to discharge somebody based on their sexual orientation. But that's a story for another day. But the bottom line to this is you get your service characterized. In today's parlance, it can be characterized as honorable or general under honorable conditions or under other than honorable conditions. And this is now consistent across the force for the most part. What's important for our conversation today is those first two characterizations qualify you for VA disability compensation. If you get an honorable or a general, you qualify for disability compensation. If you get an under other than honorable conditions characterization of your service, it's a bar to benefits. Also, if you're court-martialed and you receive a bad conduct discharge or a dishonorable discharge from the court-martial, you're also barred from receiving VA compensation. So you can see why it's so important to have the proper characterization. But all hope is not lost if you have a negative characterization, because there are ways to get over that.
Yeah, and I know that one of the things that we've experienced is sometimes people with one of those not necessarily favorable discharges, they'll go ahead and apply for their benefits. And in some cases, the VA will grant them benefits for health care, meaning they'll treat them for their disability, but they will not compensate them for their disability. And my understanding about that is that that is VA discretion.
Correct. Yep. Service connection for health care purposes only. Right. And we've seen it a ton of times, haven't we?
Definitely. So tell me a couple of things that could happen if you ended up with a dishonorable discharge. You did mention the homosexuality, which I understand that recently they have come out and said that they were going to treat those differently going forward. That doesn't necessarily help everybody who's already been, you know, applied and been denied a long time ago. They can now reapply, but maybe they should have been getting benefits all along. Would love to see them correct that, but we'll see what happens with that. What other kind of things? Misconduct. What would be considered misconduct that would have you discharged dishonorably?
It can be from the most minor, as long as there's a pattern of it, to the most major. But here's where our advocacy comes in. A lot of times, let's take our global war on terrorism vets and take a fairly typical situation where a vet or where a soldier, say, deploys, is in combat, has traumatic experiences, returns home with PTSD. That soldier then starts to commit what might be considered minor offenses. They don't show up to work on time. They don't do their job quite as well as they used to. They're probably going to have some alcohol-related offenses. They're probably going to have some domestic-related offenses. Mm-hmm. And I would say for the bulk of the 2000s, from 2000 and even probably all the way through 2014, what was very common, notwithstanding congressional studies and other pushes from grassroots and other organizations, but what would happen would be that the Army, the Marines, the Air Force, they've got to march on. They've got to keep their force moving forward so they don't have time to mess around with these patterns of misconduct. These, you know, frankly, in the Army, they'd call them a shitbag soldier. And it's not a fair characterization considering what they've been through, right? But what they will do is instead of seeking medical treatment, a medical diagnosis, and looking at a medical retirement, they just say, you know, he's a dirtbag. She's not what she used to be. She's falling behind. Let's just discharge them for a pattern of misconduct.
Definitely.
And a lot of times those result in a general characterization. So they still qualify for general or for VA compensation. But sometimes those result in UOTHC under other than honorable conditions. And it's a bar to benefits.
It also can become a problem moving forward into the civilian world for job responsibilities when you have one of those types of discharges. I know I've got a client that I'm working with right now that is a subject that I know we want to talk about in an upcoming segment is military sexual trauma. And she was eventually ended up getting that service connected, but she was discharged with a other than honorable. And it bothers her to this day because she feels like it's affected her job qualifications in the civilian world,
right?
Because she has that negative, quote unquote, paper. But now they have acknowledged that this did happen to her.
That's right. And it changes everything. And so a big part of that is going to the Board for Correction of Military Records. Each service department has their own BCMR. Well, the Marines fall under the Navy's. And this is the organization that has the power, by federal law, a decision to change the characterization of service or some other crucial paperwork. But a decision by the BCMR is binding on the VA. No questions asked. The VA doesn't get to say, well, we still think it was dishonorable. No, the VA has to accept a change made by the BCMR.
So in that case, it changes that VA discretion that I was telling you about with regards to whether or not they'll give him compensation or health care. This becomes then a responsibility that they have to give compensation. Am I understanding that correctly?
Well, assuming they have service connection and all the other things that we
sure.
know are required for compensation. But yes, the VA has to honor that. It takes it out of the VA's discretion. And so I think this is where I should tell you about just a sample case about how this plays out.
That'd be great.
A Vietnam veteran is discharged from the Marines. This guy made the sacrifice like so many did. He joined when he was 17. The Navy made sure that he turned 18 on the ship over to the theater, so that he could be 18, so that he could go into combat on behalf of his nation. He saw some really hard combat, and his combat record in the records, the personnel records, supports it. It is all over. You can tell that this Marine did some very hard things. He came home. He had some issues while he was there. He had some misconduct, minor stuff, very minor stuff. He was 18. He was a teenager, right? Mm-hmm. But then he came home to little town in Utah, and he married his sweetheart, and they became pregnant with their first baby. And he got the word that their unit was retasked and would be fairly soon redeploying, or not redeploying, but deploying back to Vietnam. And he made the choice to go AWOL, absent without leave. Mm-hmm. And in fact, for a time, he was branded a deserter. And his AWOL lasted a little more than 3 months, and he turned himself in here at the local DOD installation. And at that point, he was processed out of the Marines. He was administratively discharged. And as sad as this is, to give you an indication about how backwards things were for these members of the military, he was given a psychological examination prior to being discharged. The psychological examination didn't test for traumatic experiences, didn't test for depression, PTSD, because of course that wasn't on their radar.
Right.
This psychological assessment tested for homosexuality.
Wow.
As if to say, well, he went AWOL, he was afraid to go into the theater, so he's either just a malfunction completely or he's gay, right? Which I hope your listeners will understand. I'm saying these things with contempt, right? So the only thing we could do is run this through the Navy Board for Correction of Military Records. See, here's the other sad truth. Jimmy Carter instituted a special discharge review program way back when, and they said, hey, these Vietnam vets, they got a bad rap. They were just put in a bad situation. And now they have all this bad paperwork. Let's go through and give them honorable discharges.
So, well, and Aaron, I want to honor the rest of your story, but we're up against a hard break. So let's revisit it when we get back from the break. When we get
right
back,
yeah.
This is Amanda with the Veterans Voice here on 790 KABC Los Angeles. We'll be right back with Aaron Drake, an attorney and veteran of the U.S. Air Force.
I had to start again with just my two.
Welcome back. This is Amanda Manier with the Veterans Voice on 790 KABC. I am a veteran advocate and attorney at the Veterans Law Group, and we work exclusively working with veterans who are pursuing their VA disability compensation. We've been doing this for about the last 25 years. Most of our clients here, or all of our clients, are veterans or their families, and most of our team here are veterans who've gone through the process themselves. So we definitely know kind of what needs to be dealt with. If you'd like to reach out for us, if you're a veteran and you're pursuing the process or even considering pursuing it or struggling through it, please feel free to contact us at veteranslaw.com or reach out to us at 888-811-0523. It is an honor to welcome guests periodically on this show. And this evening, we are speaking with Aaron Drake. He spent a time in the military, recently retired after 20 years, did a tour over in Iraq, and worked in a military law primarily throughout that period. He's now a Utah attorney practicing out of Utah, but as with most things veterans, we work with clients all over the country and often all over the world. I know we particularly have clients in Germany and the Philippines and that kind of thing. So we're based out of Southern California, but work with people anywhere. Welcome back, Aaron.
Hi, thanks. And thanks for indulging my story. You know, as advocates, we tell our clients stories, and I think we love doing it, right?
Oh, absolutely. And I think the stories are so important. There is success, especially in the tough ones. I have a client that we just recently, he won his 20-year battle with the VA. He was at 0%. We got him service connected to 100%. And I love telling that story. You have a very unique one here where you were just talking before we went to the break, Vietnam veteran who served overseas in Vietnam, came back, had a lot of struggles, as many people do when they come back, ultimately ended up being discharged without a mental health evaluation, but they discharged him for homosexuality. Does that, sum it up what you were at so far, and then I'll let you take it away?
For the lack of homosexuality, basically they found he was not gay, therefore he's just not fit for service anymore. He's just broken.
Oh, interesting.
They were saying if he was gay, there might have been some tolerance for his refusal to go back to war. I don't know what their point was.
So these are one of those things that I call a cop out. It's like when they discharge somebody for a personality disorder. I'm like, well, did you even try to give them a diagnosis? You know, but we're talking Vietnam veterans, so I imagine this would have been 70s, 80s when he got out.
Well, 69.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. So a period of time.
Yeah.
A period of time where they weren't really recognizing things like PTSD. But you said he went AWOL for 3 months, got bad paper coming out, and then pick it up from there.
And then began his suffering. From 1969 began his suffering. Just tragic PTSD symptoms that he dealt with. For the following 50 years, he was also exposed to Agent Orange because he was boots on the ground.
Sure.
So he had a quadruple bypass. He had coronary artery disease. He has all sorts of other conditions that are just devastating his life, right? Mm-hmm. And all along the way, he's applying for benefits. And the VA keeps telling him no. Then he gets, under the discharge review program, he gets a general under honorable conditions characterization. Now, here's where it gets cruel to this veteran. He goes to the VA and says, I have this new paperwork. And they said, oh, yeah, but that's not binding on the VA.
Mm.
So apparently, you know, and true enough, they were correct in their application of the law. That was not binding on the VA. So they kept him as dishonorable. So when he came to me, we knew that the only thing we could do is go for that one that's binding on the VA, which is a Board for Correction of Military Records petition. And we filed the petition, and we alleged simply that he was not afforded due process. The government has deprived him of property for all of these years, and certainly at the time they discharged him, without due process of law, without consideration as to all the facts and circumstances that led to the circumstances that caused his discharge. And although it took almost 2 years, we won that petition, and he was given a general under honorable conditions, bulletproof service characterization.
And as then, you were saying before the break, that then becomes binding on the VA.
That's right. Then started the fight with the VA because now we have to go back to the connection. Now we have to go back and argue about effective date because he's presumptively connected for some of the things like heart disease. He's not presumptively connected for PTSD, but there's plenty of medical evidence. And this ended up being a very good news story. But it was, a 4.5 year fight total.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a very, very favorable result for our veteran client. But this just shows the power of how a certain discharge characterization can hurt you,
mm-hmm.
and the power of when you get it fixed, how that can help you.
Well, and definitely finding the right people who are going to be on your side. And I mean, I know that, you know, my history and my story of how I got into working with this is it really came down to I'd been a business law attorney for years. And I had I live in Southern California. There are a lot of military here, a lot of veterans. I had a lot of people who were friends of mine that were in the military or veterans. And it was somebody who was just struggling to get his benefits. And I, you're trained as an advocate. And so you're like, well, surely I can help him figure this out. And it was so amazing to me, like how often I found, you know, going down to the VA and asking, okay, well, help me figure this out. And, oh, well, I don't do that. Go talk to that person. Oh, I don't do that. Talk to that person. And it becomes very frustrating. And I do, you know, you and I've talked about this before, that I do try to a little bit curb my cynicism about the VA because I know that when it comes to appeals, which is all we work in, I don't see it when the VA gets it right. I see it when they get it either horribly wrong or at least partially wrong. So I imagine working within that framework of you're trying to help people with discharges, you're not seeing it where the VA is just, or the, you know, military is getting it right. You're getting frustrated or with dealing with them when they get it wrong. And sometimes it's just so horribly wrong. It's amazing.
Right, right. Now here's some good news. Here's some insight from the inside. We had hired a former VA employee So a guy that was in the trenches at the VA for 13 years, rating cases, then supervising and finding errors, quality control and stuff like that. I was surprised to find out from him that when those raiders, when those people in the trenches of the VA get to give the big payday to a veteran, when something's finally granted and there's a big chunk of back pay that goes to that veteran, those VA employees celebrate with that veteran behind the not literally with the veteran, obviously, but they have their own celebration and they're so happy to do it. Yeah. And I was surprised to learn that those are happy days for VA employees, and I was happy to learn that.
Yeah, we certainly, over the years of working with people, you find the, you know, you end up working with a lot of the same people over and over again. And sometimes it's like when you find out somebody's been assigned a case, you're like, oh, thank God, because we know we can work with them, you know. I always talk about how it's our job to make it super easy for the VA to grant our client's case. I'll put all A plus B plus C equals D. I'll put all the ducks in a row. I'm not going to flood you with thousands and thousands of paperwork. And that's some of the value of working with an advocate. And I imagine it's the same in working with discharge upgrades.
Absolutely. Yep.
Now,
paint the picture for them.
Yeah, definitely. And make it super easy. One of the things I'd love to ask you about, I'm not sure we've ever had this conversation. We work here with a lot of incarcerated veterans. And it's something that me and one of my paralegals here, who is an Army veteran, have just a particular heart for. I refer to them as the forgotten veterans. They end up going to jail for something maybe related to their service, like a PTSD, or maybe not related to their service. But just because they're incarcerated, it does reduce some of their benefits, but it doesn't take them all away. And one of the things I found in going out to prisons and meeting with these communities, they have veterans groups. They're all like typical military, all in, very respectful. Yes, ma'am, no, ma'am. They do the Pledge of Allegiance at the beginning of their meetings, the prayer, all of that kind of thing. But I have had a lot of them that have reached out to me and asked if I could help them get a discharge upgrade. We don't do that, of course, but I understand that that's going to be a struggle because they're currently incarcerated. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, this is the challenge for veterans, particularly who might be incarcerated, who might be homeless, who might be impoverished, because there are so many restrictions on us as attorneys as to what we can charge for. And then there are restrictions as to what clients can even pay for. And you and I certainly would love to do our work for free, but that doesn't work in today's society. We have to make a living. We have to have a job. So I do believe the answer to this is these law school, several law schools now have established veteran law clinics, and they have income cutoffs for those clients that they will help. In fact, I was just at the NOVA conference a couple of weeks ago. So National Organization of Veteran Advocates. We were in Washington, D.C. We had a professor from Hofstra University's law school.
Mm-hmm.
Speak to us. They have this wonderful program. They are not yet doing BCMR petitions pro bono or for free, but they are doing VA disability appeals for certain clients that meet certain income thresholds. And their intention is to add BCMR petitions to their slate of services that they can offer clients.
Nice.
That's going to have to be the answer. It's going to have to be charities and organizations that can do this, because private practice attorneys can't afford to do it, except for maybe one or two, which we do. We will carry one or two pro bono BCMR petitions that we select on a case-by-case basis. But we can't do that for all veterans, of course.
Sure. Now, is it, and one of the, it's because one of my understandings of doing discharge upgrades is that if you were discharged for, you know, maybe a quote unquote valid reason, you know, misconduct, and in later, one of the things that you're having to show to get a discharge upgrade is what your current situation is. So being incarcerated may be a hindrance to that, because you're not really showing that you've lived a further good life. Is that a misconception that I have about that? Or is that apply like how you're currently living your life in the way that you can get discharge upgrade?
My understanding is that that would probably be a little bit of a misconception, because when it comes down to a due process analysis of the discharge that led the person out of the military, it's frozen in time. What process were they afforded, and was it sufficient? Mm. What evidence did the board consider, or did the commander consider, and was it sufficient evidence on which to base an under other than honorable conditions discharge?
Okay.
Was there extortion? Were they saying to the soldier, hey, you're either out and you sign this thing or we're going to make your life hell. Well, guess what? The soldiers sign.
Then there's a lot of... Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of things to look into. We're about to go up to a break. This is Amanda Manier with the Veterans Voice on 790 KABC. We're speaking with Aaron Drake, an Air Force veteran and also an attorney who is helping veterans with all kinds of things. We'll be right back.
Thank my lucky stars to be living here today.
This is Amanda Manier with the Veterans Voice here on 790 KABC. I'm a veteran advocate and attorney with the Veterans Law Group, who our organization helps veterans who are pursuing their disability compensation. And as part of that, the majority of our clients, or all of our clients, are veterans or their families or their spouses. And most of our team here is as well. One of the things I love to do is to interview other people who are helping veterans in various capacities, not only with their VA disability compensation, but other things as well. Or have unique perspectives on what's currently going on with the VA and veterans across the country. This evening, we're joined by Aaron Drake. He is an attorney out of the state of Utah. He is also a veteran himself. And one of the things that was coming up, we were talking before the break about discharges and discharge upgrades. But one thing I would love to get to shift gears a little bit, Aaron, if you'd let me, is that you and I have worked, talk about we were having a heart for incarcerated veterans over here. But I also, my whole team in particular, they know that I can't turn down a military sexual trauma case. If somebody comes to us, they've been denied, and the VA rates it and they look at it as PTSD based on an MST case. And they know that I can't turn it down because I just can't. I have a particular heart for it. And I know you do as well. And I would love to get your thoughts. I'm just going to turn it over to you for a few minutes and love to get your thoughts and give you a little bit of a soapbox.
Thanks. I do appreciate it. And it's kind of sad, but leave it to the military to even have an acronym for sexual assault.
Right, exactly.
MST.
Yep.
A lot of people aren't necessarily familiar with that, but MST, and as Amanda said, military sexual trauma, it's a huge problem. And it happens. And I think what you, dear listeners, need to know is that you have advocates who will believe you, and trust you and advocate for you,
mm-hmm.
no matter
yep.
what.
Yep.
Our policy is the same, Amanda. We will not turn down a case where a military member is suffering the effects and the symptoms of having been sexually assaulted. And here's the great thing about the way we can advocate for these cases now. And you and I have talked about these cases, and I know we've seen success because there are these myths and misconceptions out there. For example, some of the myths are, well, you have to be a woman to be a survivor
yes.
of sex assault. Obviously
yes.
a myth, right? You have to be raped. Well, that's obviously a myth, too. Sex assault comes in all shapes and sizes and types, and it's horrific for the survivors, and it has devastating effects. But there are also misconceptions when it comes to VA claims, which is, well, I never reported it while I was in the service, so mm-hmm. I don't get benefits.
Or that's probably...
Yeah,
that's probably the number one reason we see for denials on it is failed to report in service. And the VA has done some work around that, and they've made some, concessions and policies around markers. So explain to the public here what markers yeah. mean.
Well, this is critical to understand, especially if you're a veteran that might not even realize what you've been going through in the after effects of this. Of these traumatic events. So the VA says, well, maybe a survivor didn't report it at the time of the incident or even during service. But the VA has also recognized that based on significant medical literature and research that there are these other markers, call them hallmarks or signs, that a survivor might show in their life that would indicate that a sexual assault has taken place. So they're in the manual that we use in our reference for our advocacy, but things like increased depression, alcohol or drug use as a coping mechanism, other obsessive behaviors that pop up. And in my experience, what I saw as a JAG in the military is I would find somebody who was, last month, they were the brightest, smiliest, happiest, best performing troop in the unit.
Yep.
Fast forward a month or two later, and now they can't pass the PT test. Now they show up for work late on almost a daily basis. Now they've got alcohol-related incidents. And if you as a commander or a JAG are not looking for, wait, what is the real cause of this? What is the root of this now what looks like a performance problem? More often than not, a traumatic event has happened.
Yes.
In that person's life. And that's yes. how it manifests. The good news for us and for our advocacy is we can now win appeals. We take veterans from 0% to 100% based on PTSD, particularly if they're unemployed, by showing, hey, the markers were always there. Yes, we don't have a report of a sexual assault in service, but the markers were and are and continue to be there.
Well, and I imagine that you've seen, if you haven't, as you continue to work in this industry, you'll see the situation of we've won cases at the board where there were no markers. We could not find a marker that were the typical kind of markers like decrease in performance, you know, alcohol, drug related things, all of those that are some of, you know, quote unquote obvious markers. The case I generally point to when I'm teaching was a case, and it was a Marine that had been sexually assaulted, and his performance actually went up after the incident. And what he was able to explain to the judge when we're doing a hearing, you can talk directly to the judge, is, well, that truly is a marker, because he was like, well, I was I'm a Marine. I'm a trained killer. I should have never let this happen to me. And so I'm going to do the best thing I can to be the best Marine just to like compensate for that and make up for it. And then
prove everybody wrong. Yeah.
Exactly. And then the judge basically looked at his story, and he didn't file his claim for 15 years later after his, you know, second failed relationship, that this was just constantly a problem. And the judge was like, okay, I believe your story. And so even I tell people all the time, even if you don't have any of those markers, it's not a bar to benefits. You'll probably get denied at the VA level. Your initial claim and maybe your initial appeal, you will probably get denied. But when you work alongside somebody like us, who are, you know, have such a heart for this, and is like, no, I'm going to take you to the judge and let you tell your story, and I will walk you through it. You know, what was interesting about this case I was just referring to is he didn't actually have to tell his story to the judge. I offered, and the judge said, I've read his medical records. He's consistently told the same story. He doesn't need to repeat it today. And I was like, oh, thank God. So there are good people in the VA like that to help with these.
That's right. That's right. And friends and listeners, this is way more common than anybody thinks or wants to believe. And if it happened to you, you're not alone. You have a lot of good company. Of fellow survivors and people who are in the same situation you're in. And it's devastating. You lose your job. You lose your relationship. You have substance abuse problems. And these are just, your body hurts, pain, fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue. All these things kick in as your body copes with the trauma. And you know, you're not alone. And you're not entirely isolated in that experience either. It's just, we still as a society, and certainly as a military society, do not talk about it openly.
Definitely. And I am happy to see it being talked a little more lately. It's kind of like PTSD wasn't talked about for Vietnam veterans back in the 60s and 70s, but it's something that is much more talked about now as more of the exposure happens. But I know that the statistics, people have asked me when I've done like news media and talking about MSD cases, and they're saying, well, what are the statistics? And it's like, well, you can go look up the statistics. And I think if I remember the last ones off the top of my head are, you know, 6 out of every 10 women report it, and it's like 4 out of every 10. It's smaller for men, but it doesn't non-exist. And that these are not reporting it when it happens. These are when they're getting healthcare after they get out, might say something about it. So if you can imagine, if those are the amount reported, the amount non-reported is way more than that.
It's very prevalent, unfortunately.
Well, and it's some of the cases I know that we've worked on, we think about it as just, you know, sexual assault of like somebody is doing something horrible to this other person, male on male, male on female, whatever. Sometimes it's initiation, things that they do out of quote unquote, out of initiation, which is sexual in nature and bothers that person to the point that it affects them for the rest of their life. I know that we have got half a dozen of those that we're currently working on right now.
those are great cases too to advocate for, because those initiation rituals and rites often turn sexual in nature and amount to, at the very least, what in the criminal world would be a sexual battery or sexual assault, right?
Right.
And those are right there in the mix. Those are deeply affecting our veterans.
Definitely. And we've just got about a minute and a half left here. And I just want to, first of all, thank you, Aaron, for being here with us. And thank you for lending your knowledge. And I know that we probably have four other topics we could talk about. So I would love to have you back. Before we break, I would love for you to give you an opportunity to tell people where to find you if they are looking for help with discharge upgrades. They want to work with somebody, you know, on their VA disability. That's what we do. But you and I have a very professional, supportive community here that I always say there is no lack of need in this industry, unfortunately. Tell everybody where they can find you.
Sure. Some people might say, well, Aaron and Amanda, they're competitors. No, we're colleagues.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And we work together for our veterans. You can email me at info@agoodattorney.com. info@agoodattorney.com. All those years. Oh yeah, you got to run.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining us. And as I've said so many times, that I hate that I work in this industry because it should not be needed. You should not have to hire an attorney to get the benefits that you need, but we're here for you. Most of us work on contingency, so just reach out to us, see if we can give you some help. This is Amanda Manier at the Veterans Voice. You can reach me at 888-811-0523 or theveteranslaw.com. We'd be happy to take a look at your case. Thank you so much for joining us this evening. Stands for freedom.